Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 142, being recorded on the 31st of August, 2016, with special guest Anton Babajanov. I'm Sujit, and on Skype with me, I have a special guest, Anton. Our listeners may notice that our normal co-hosts, Kale Teeter and Evan Basilik, are not with us today. Evan, unfortunately, as you most of you know, is in Azure support, and he got caught in a survey support issue with a customer, and obviously that always comes first, so he's currently dealing with some pretty intense customer issues. And Kayla is on his way from South Carolina to New York right now, probably in the air, so unfortunately he can't join us either. So it's myself and our special guest Anton. So before we start talking to Anton about a topic that we've kind of visited before a long time ago, but thought it was a good time to give our listeners a refresher on that topic, and that is API management. We'll give Anton a lot of opportunity to discuss that. But before we get there, as always, let's just talk about some of the recent updates in the Azure space. I picked a few that I thought would be kind of interesting. One of them was this new MySQL in-app for web apps. So currently in web apps, you could use an external database. You can't really run another database engine inside of the web apps instance itself. And currently, this preview feature that's being released allows you to run MySQL in the same instance as your web app. So it's kind of like co-located inside of your web app instance. So it gives you that extra performance because you're not taking a big network hop to get to another database server. I guess, you know, for smaller applications that just need a local database, this is something that might work well. It supports, the usual PHP, WordPress, Joomla, Drupal, all the other things that people love about the web community. So I think that's a good a new enhancement that's out there in preview form, just to be clear. The second one that I picked out was related to the Azure Dev Test Labs. As you know, the if you use one of these lab features, essentially the labs, once they're running for a while, there is and you can set an automatic timer where they get shut down automatically. But in the past, they would get shut down, and even if the user was on it, they wouldn't know, and then next thing you know, the user has lost the lab. So right now, there's this feature where they can specify, they can get a notification that the lab is about to shut down, and then they have an option to kind of postpone it. You know, maybe they're not finished working on the lab, and they need another half an hour to work on it. So now that feature is available where they can get a notification pop up and then postpone the shutdown if necessary. Third thing up is, the Cognitive Services APIs. We've talked about them in the past. They've added a couple new ones here. One is the Computer Vision API, and that kind of gives you the tools to understand what's in any image. So you can kind of give it a picture, and it kind of gives you, breaks down that picture for you, tries to pick a rich information from that picture, and so it kind of gives you a little more information about what might be, what objects might be in that picture. Another one that they introduced was an Academic Knowledge API, which is very interesting. As you know, when academia use search engines, you know, they're looking for something kind of very specific to their field. They really want to maybe look up a whole lot of papers, research documents, reference material, and kind of put all that together. And you know, so when they put a query out there, that's what they want to focus on. So this academic knowledge API lets customers do that, where they can send in these very natural query language kind of search queries, and that would then go and look up all these academic-specific data sources, and essentially it's all coming from Bing eventually, but it's a very kind of constrained set of data that's used to provide an answer that is most suited for what someone in academia may be looking for. You know, I mean, they're not looking for the weather or, you know, sports scores and things like that. They're kind of more focused on the kind of work that they're doing. So that's something very specific to academia. And finally, I think we did talk about it last time. There was the service bus change that was announced last time in the last podcast, where the namespaces for service bus can now be managed in the new portal. Well, now they've added event hubs as well, so the event hubs namespaces can also be managed in the new Azure portal. So that's kind of a quick roundup on all the updates. Right, so let's turn the mic over to our guest. So Anton, could you please first introduce yourself to our listeners so that we have some understanding, or they have some understanding on what you do at Microsoft?
Sure. So I am Anton Babojanov. So I've been at I'm a program manager on the Azure API Management team, first of all, and my team is actually part of a larger team at Microsoft called the Integration Team, which also contains Logic Apps, Scheduler, and BizTalk Server, amongst others. And so I've been working at Microsoft for 5 years now. And I've been working on our API management effort actually since its very beginning, since day one, which was sort of around late 2012. And I guess it originally started as a investigation into how can we do billing for APIs, and over time morphed into a full-on what services can we provide in the API space to help people launch their API programs. As it's typical for such an early effort, we sort of looked at whether we should build something or perhaps buy you know, a company, the buy versus build analysis, which ended up going the acquisition route. And the way the current product that we have in Azure came to be is that around the fall of 2013, we acquired a DC-based startup, Epiphany, and then in 2014 launched their product under the Azure umbrella.
Okay, that's a good. That's a very good introduction. Yeah, I remember we actually did a show on API management probably in 2013 or somewhere there. You know, there shortly thereafter, and so it's been a while since we talked about this particular service. But so give me an idea as to, you know, what were some of the early kind of customer asks. You know, like what were customers looking for that prompted us to do this analysis of, you know, providing a service like API management. What were the gaps out there that you know, every time we produce a new service, it's because customers are asking for something, right?
Yeah, I mean, so customers usually start with some backend services they've already built. Most organizations over time have been building web services, but usually that has been done for internal use. And so at some point they find themselves of the need to turn these internal backends into an API for third-party consumption. And when I say third party, that doesn't necessarily have to mean a public API. It can just mean enabling another team within the organization to leverage this API. For example, one common scenario is enabling mobile or social experiences. And what happens with this is that if you in your organization, if you build some services, you most likely have another team that is working on the mobile applications. And they want to access these services, but maybe these services were built for specifically to be accessed by some existing system or in between themselves. So ideally, you want to enable the mobile team and perhaps other teams to access your services, but you don't want to give them direct access. So what you need to do, and sort of what the crux of API management is, sort of two things. I would say at the very least, building a facade on top of these backend services so that you have a consistent API that only contains the methods that are useful for third parties, and makes them easy to use. So there's no so they're consistent in terms of their, for example, URL structure, the parameters they take, which is usually not the case when you have multiple backends, but also a way to authenticate all of these clients that you're going to have, whether this is the mobile team or whether this is an external team that you enable. So authentication is a key scenario. And it kind of started from there, I think. And then we looked at other scenarios like, for example, okay, now that you have these clients, how do you track their usage? Like, how do you get analytics on the services you're using? And there is the whole aspect of transformation. So I mentioned building a facade, but quite often services may use different data formats. So we're talking about things like XML to JSON transformation. So the idea here is really to modernize these backends, not just to make them consistent, but to be able to convert them to something that is consumable by a modern application. One of the things, for example, from these asks that we are actually just now preparing to deliver is support for SOAP APIs, and in the future, SOAP to REST. Obviously, there is a large pool of built-up SOAP services, but nowadays, as I mentioned in the mobile example, we may need to consume, as in the mobile developers expect to consume a REST API and expect, for example, JSON on the wire as opposed to XML, so that it's more efficient and there's less data consumed. So we're sort of trying to help people modernize their APIs.
I see.
With this platform.
So I was going to ask you that because, you know, I'm with the customer right now, with the financial services customer, and they're very, very heavily internally focused on SOAP services. At least they have been over the last many years. It's all WCF and whatnot. But, you know, they've been looking at how they can expose these services outside. So, currently, in its current incarnation, API management does not allow you to call SOAP services, and this is something that we're looking to offer, or is that something that's there but not fully baked?
Well, you could potentially make it work right now, but we are actually working on a high-quality sort of first-class support for SOAP services, first in the form of passing through SOAP service calls to a backend, and then SOAP to REST. And these are features that are coming basically this year by the end of the year, the calendar year.
I see. Oh, that'd be very, very interesting and something I'm sure our listeners would be looking forward to. Now, tell me, so go ahead, Anton, you want to...
Yeah, actually, one thing I want to add to sort of add to the original question, another key scenario is also educating your target audience, so your clients, as you as the API provider, of your API. So providing a place where they can find out, okay, what APIs are being offered, what do I need to do as a developer to make calls to them, perhaps being able to test them, and getting onboarded. So a developer portal. That was one of the key asks from the very beginning from pretty much every customer as well.
Right. Yeah, I do remember setting up one API management. And I think, am I correct that you could set up a canned response as well? Like you don't have to go to the backend, or do you have to connect to the backend?
We do support this now, but this is actually a fairly recent development that we have support for this. We have something called policies in API management, which is basically a way to set forth rules or post-processing steps on the API pipeline as calls go from the client through API management to your backend service. So we as the mediator, as the gateway basically, can modify the request or the response. And so one of the policies that API publishers can use is called return response, which allows them to return a response even if the backend is not doing that, or even if there is just simply no backend at all, to basically mock an actual backend.
Okay, great. So you can actually quickly stand up like a developer portal, say, and get your mobile developers going while you're actually trying to work on the back end and hook it up and things like that.
Right. So in our administrative interface, you can define how your API facade or basically the public interface will look like, what operations it will have, what parameters they will take, headers, so forth, sample responses, and then using policies, you can make it actually return these sample responses. And I should mention policies are actually quite powerful. We have something called Policy Expressions, which is a feature that allows you to write C# code. And with that, you can actually write an elaborate sort of path through which your policy tries to determine based on what percent to it, what it should return. So you could potentially have a very detailed mock of the actual backend service before you have the service.
I see, I see. Now, so you mentioned this policies is something relatively new, so that's something that's you know, would be an update from when we last talked about it.
To be very specific, we've had policies for a while, but one of the things we've been doing, so we've had them since we launched the product, but one of the things we've been doing over the time, and certainly since the last podcast, has been adding new policies.
Got it.
So this particular policy return response is new.
What else? Is there anything else you could kind of think of that was added in the last year and a half in the service? How have they enhanced the service since we last spoke about this?
Yeah, well, there's quite a few things. I think actually policy expressions, as I mentioned, is on the policy end and on the transformation side of things, is one of the new policies. We have a policy called control flow, which allows you to basically write if statements and have conditional logic inside your policies. Again, helping you write more elaborate paths and transform different types of responses. We now allow you to change the backend service via policies. So what that can allow you to do is you could call multiple different backends in one single API, so you can fan out responses.
You can aggregate data from different backends, what you're saying.
And that's actually a separate scenario via a different policy called send request, where you can call multiple backends, get the responses from them, and then combine them into whatever way you actually want and return, as you mentioned, the aggregate response. So that is also another new thing that we've launched in this time period.
Excellent. Very good. Yeah.
Yeah. And so this is just a snapshot from the policy side. Actually, still on policies, we have made caching much more powerful. So previously, we only allowed caching call responses. Now it is possible to store any variable that you would like into the cache and use the cache as a sort of key value store. This is particularly powerful in the previous example where you're aggregating data from multiple sources, because you don't want to necessarily cache the entire response that you're getting from the backend. Really, there's multiple backends now in this case, but you sort of want to cache what you get from these various requests. So you want to cache on a lower granularity level, and we allow you to do this to write a more complex caching mechanism.
And is this like its own caching, or does it use something like Redis?
So it's built into to the API management instance. So when you I should mention, when you provision API management, regardless of which tier you use, we are available in three different pricing tiers at the moment. You always get dedicated resources. So and there's a number of resources that make up the service, starting from VMs, storage services, SQL databases, but they're always dedicated to you. So the cache that you leverage through policies is running on your own dedicated instance.
Okay, I understand. Now, I'm glad you mentioned tiers, Anton, because I now distinctively remember when we spoke about this on our last podcast. One of my pet peeves at the time was that the API management service was too expensive. Okay, I remember saying that if you took the very first tier, the lowest tier at the time, and you had an MSDN account, you could probably exhaust that MSDN account credit very quickly. How has that changed? Are there any changes to the pricing tiers that we've had since then?
Not as of now, but I would advise the listeners to stay tuned.
Ah, okay, I'm very hopeful on that then. Thank you. So give me a sense for how security is handled. Obviously, that's a big part, right, this whole thing, how the calls are secured coming in from the mobile device, for example.
Yeah, so there's multiple levels of security in sort of the workflow or the life cycle of a developer. So when it comes to the actual calls, Traditionally, what we support is API key security. So to take a step back, how do these API keys come to be? Developers, which are going to use an API as exposed to API management, are expected to go to the developer portal of the given API provider, create an account, and then based on this account, subscribe to so-called products, which are really just groupings of APIs, and get API keys from these products which API keys allow them to call the API. Now, again, taking a step back, when developers, first of all, register for an account on this developer portal, there are a number of ways to authenticate the developer. So obviously, we support basic authentication, just username and password, but we also support social authentication. So we support Facebook, Google, Twitter, and Microsoft accounts. We now recently, and I don't know if this was in the past year and a half, perhaps it was, we enabled support for Azure Active Directory, which is actually comes in handy because when it comes to setting permissions on who can see what products and what APIs, these permissions can be tied to Azure Active Directory groups. So one can use the directory to sort of decide which set of which developers, which then log into it, will see which APIs.
And this would be applicable, say, for an enterprise corporate structure and things like that, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a great help for all of our enterprise customers, which a lot of them use Azure Active, use Active Directory in general. And also we have on the authentication side, we provide the ability to completely bypass the built-in authentication systems and use your own. And so when this is set up, the API Management Developer Portal will basically call. And again, this developer portal is owned by the API provider, so it can be fully customized and branded to match their image. So it will basically call their third-party site that they set up where authentication happens. So effectively, the experience that gets built in this case is one where the user doesn't log into the developer portal at all. They just log into whatever login the organization already had. And then that third-party system makes sure that they return back to the developer portal logged in as if they logged in on it. And so they use only one set of credentials. Basically, this avoids creating a second set of credentials for the developer portal if the organization already has one set.
So some kind of a OAuth model, right, where they log into one system, get some sort of header or cookie set, and then they're allowed to get into the portal.
Yeah, you can think of it this way, but I must say this is now specifically for the developer portal.
Right.
So once the developer has logged into a developer portal and has subscribed to a product, they get a set of API keys, and that is sort of the basic way we authenticate requests to an API via these API keys. So the developer can then integrate these keys into their application, so that the application provides the keys when making a call. Now, that's not the only way to authenticate API requests. One actually very recent addition we provided is the ability to check for mutual certificates on the front end. So, mind you, I should say we've always supported mutual certificate authentication when it comes to making calls to backends. But when it comes to client making a call to the API Management Exposed public endpoint, that's something new. So that's one way. And then we also do OAuth token pass-through. So if the backend service accepts OAuth tokens to identify the user, we can pass through this token, and on our developer portal, which provides documentation for the APIs being called, There's also a console there where basically any developer can make a call to the API without writing any code. This console also is able to do the OAuth handshake with the authorization server that is set up for this backend, so that the successful call can be made.
Wow, that's very good. So it handles security. It handles all the message transformation, right, from the front end, from mm-hmm. the REST-based interface into the back end service. And I'm assuming it does all sorts of like tracing, logging, troubleshooting? How do you go about, like, if something that breaks, how do you go about finding out, like, how does the actual mobile developer figure out what went wrong when they called an API and it got like some sort of a 500 error or something like that?
So from the perspective of the API provider who is setting up their API for exposure, they can do a number of things to verify that their API is working successfully. So API providers have access to a developer portal just as in the same way that the API the developers coming in from the outside have. And when they can make calls to each one of their APIs from the developer portal. But now specifically for the API providers, they can see a trace that shows them exactly what is happening inside the gateway that we provide. It shows them a step-by-step list of all operations that a gateway performed. And they can see if any one of these operations failed and perhaps why it failed.
Got it.
So
Okay.
this is one way to do debugging. Another way, still from the API publisher side, is that one of the new policies that actually we added over the last year, which is for much more than debugging but can be used for that as well, is called log to event hub. So what this policy allows us to do, allows the API publisher to do, is to send any data from the request or the response to Azure Event Hub, which is sort of a pub sub system, and from there the data can be sent to really a number of possible consumers for further analysis. So one common use case of that is to send the data via Azure Stream Analytics to Power BI, and in Power BI make a custom dashboard looking, for example, for specific anomalies in the data or for any issues. So that would really allow one to peer into what's happening into the calls, and if there is some kind of error happening, log in specific data for each error that helps debug the issue.
That's great. And so they could also set up some sort of alerts on that, right? And then kind of alert them if they detect some anomaly.
Yes, and actually for this particular kind of anomaly, this would be alerts that they set up on their own using Event Hub and hooking
Correct.
up to something else. We don't yet support this.
Yeah, and
We
it's the
don't have
same.
some
Yeah, that's
alerts,
you,
but
you can do all that cool stuff with Event Hub, right? Since you're
yes,
streaming,
yes.
you're getting the data in the stream. Excellent. So, one of the thoughts that occurred to me when you were talking about all these things that are happening inside of the gateway here is, what's the general overhead of the gateway? I mean, obviously we're doing a lot of stuff, right? It's clear, but we must have some sort of a target overhead or benchmark that we set to make sure that we're not spending too much time in the gateway. Do we have any like approximate figures on that?
And you mean gateway in terms of penalty
Yes.
for making a call
What's
through it?
yep.
Yeah. So I mean, the penalty of the actual gateway is actually very minuscule. I believe it was just a couple milliseconds, in the single-digit milliseconds. But the penalty can go up depending on how many policies are set up.
Right.
So each policy obviously, takes CPU time, if you have a very large payload. And you do a complex transformation on it, whether it be JSON to XML or whether you have some C# code that actually does some work on it, that can take time. Moreover, if you are using the send request policy and actually making outbound calls to fetch data from different data sources from different backends, then obviously this is going to incur network latency and the
Sure.
time necessary for the other backends to respond. Now, I should mention, in this particular scenario of sending requests, they do happen asynchronously, so they can happen simultaneously. So you don't have to necessarily wait for each one of them one by one to complete. Generally, I think we're talking about sort of very low latency. In total, when everything gets put together, so authentication, some basic load, basic policy load, on average, we're still talking about sort of in the tens, maybe less than 100 milliseconds. And actually, I think in all these cases, the network latency is more than the latency that's incurred by the
Right.
gateway.
Right. Okay, so just so I understand, so the general setup is then, let's suppose I have, like I mentioned, this customer of mine, they've got a bunch of WCF SOAP services internally, and they wanted to expose some of them externally. They could stand up an instance of the API gateway and set it up, and then they would connect in through, ex they would have to set up an express route or something like that, right, to be able to connect into their backend services just like normal.
Yes, that's so it depends on where the backend services live. If the backend services have a publicly facing IP address, so they have an IP address on the internet, we can directly call to them. If they are on premise, currently the path that we provide officially is using VPN. And actually, I must say we support classic VPN right now. Support for the new ARM VNets is coming also within by the end of the year, basically. So that's a way to connect with it. Now, when it comes to Azure Express Route, we are sort of still working on full support. We have some customers using Express Route with API management, but I think there's a few things we have to flesh out to make that work easily for customers.
Got it. Okay. Now you mentioned something about tiers earlier. Can you just quickly mention what kind of tiers are we offering?
Yeah, so I mean, API management is available in three tiers at the moment. They're called Developer, Standard, and Premium. And so, Developer tier is our lowest end tier. It's basically for non-production purposes. It has a few limits. For example, it can pass through up to 1 million API calls per month and 5 GB of data. And it allows you to test all of the features that are available in higher tiers, like for example Azure Active Directory and VPN, with the only exception of multi-region deployment.
Okay.
But again, this is a testing tier, really. It has no SLA, and that tier comes at $49 a month. And so you may ask, well, this is the testing tier. Why does it cost money? Well, we're actually not making money on this. This is just the cost of all the dedicated machines that have to be set up for the service to run.
Right.
So this is it's really just the lowest price we can offer to help developers get onboarded. It's important to know because people ask, well, can we have a cheaper tier? But again, for a cheaper tier, stay tuned.
Yep.
Then we also have the first, so we have the other two tiers, standard and premium, are the production level tiers, and they both come with an SLA. So the standard tier is the first production tier. It supports up to 217 million API calls per month, and it can handle 1 TB of data. So we're really talking here multiple orders of magnitude more.
Wow.
Yeah. It has up to 1 GB of cache. And also, you can scale the number of instances you have to up to 4 units. So you can balance based on the demand you have. And the SLA that's part of it is 99.9%.
Okay.
And so that tier comes at $699 a month. And so the next tier is the premium tier, which is also currently our highest end tier. So with that tier, the API calls you can make per month is basically 1 billion. So again, almost an order of magnitude more. And you can handle up to 5 TB of data per month. It's important to note that, by the way, so scaling really changes here. This is the first tier, the only tier, that supports multi-region deployment. So we are available in almost all Azure regions. And the ones that we are not available in are going to come over the next year, basically. And so you can deploy the gateway and the developer portal into a number of regions. And then for each region, you can have by default between 1 and 10 instances, but we actually support more than 10 on request as well. So you can scale practically unlimited to unlimited sort of usage with this tier.
Wow.
And so the SLA is also higher for it. It's 99.95%. And there are also a number of features that are only available in it, like for example AAD, Azure Active Directory is only available in the premium tier, and so is support for VPN. So it's really a tier geared towards enterprise users,
Right.
having specific features that they need.
Okay. So you talked about enterprise customers. So give us a feel for what type of customers are using API management. It's just generally like what are they using it for? Like what have you heard from the field or from your customer base about the usage for API management?
Yeah, so there's a sort of wide range, maybe starting with government services. There's a number of different kinds of agencies that use API management. By the way, when it comes to all customers, sort of everybody uses the developer portal to provide documentation to their users. So that's kind of one of the basic things. One interesting thing that may happen, that actually happens with some of the government services, is that they want to integrate data from various data sources. And so what we mentioned before with the send request policy is a scenario that enables them to do this, and sort of do caching on these various data sources. Another sector is for example, hospitality services is one area in which we have a number of customers. It's interesting from this set. What we've learned is that basically, providing an API helps them understand how their partners will use their data for. So, and this is sort of I guess common for multiple sectors as well. It's sort of like opening a Pandora's box. I mean, there are some basic scenarios, like maybe we want to enable mobile apps. We want to enable particular partner XYZ to use our internal data. But really, we could enable in an unlimited set of scenarios with a public
Right,
API. And so
so it
that's
sounds
kind of
like
what.
governance is a big part of this, right? Being able
Yeah,
to.
and so actually, the other part that goes with that is just analytics.
Yeah.
Which particular APIs and operations get the most calls? What data are our customers trying to extract? And so that's kind of one part. We also have customers in the IoT sort of space. And I think one of the beneficial features there we have is multi-region deployment. When you have devices running in multiple geographies and trying to lower the latency that the devices experience, you can provision API management in these multiple regions. And actually, one of the benefits of a multi-region deployment is that now you start having a cache in all of these regions. So even if you have a backend in only one region, if you have read-only data, this data can be cached locally in the region of your instance and significantly lower the latency that a client will experience when trying to read this data. Sort of related to that, we have some clients in the automotive industry using the service for vehicle telemetry. And again, sort of analytics makes a lot of sense, rate limiting.
Good.
So
That's
that's kind of a
it's a
snapshot.
nice wide swath over there. Very nice.
I feel like if I try to go over the sort of various segments and industries in which we have customers, I'll spend
Oh yeah, I
a
mean
long time. This is.
API management is one of those really interesting toolbox style services, right? That can be used for a number of things, right? It's some people are more important find it important for to do say the just the management of the services. Others find it more important to say do governance or be do, getting telemetry, finding out who's analytics and seeing who's using what and why and how many times and things like that. So it's I like that service. I like it for that reason. It's very good. Now, do we have any compare like I mean, just quickly, I want to talk about competitors real quick before we wrap up over here to API management because I know in my work with customers, they often talk about think companies like MuleSoft and Apigee. Do you see them as being having equivalent services that API management offers, or are they start totally different?
Well, they're definitely similar in many aspects. Now, with that said, we do have some unique capabilities. Like, for example, our sort of integration with Event Hub, as I mentioned, is something unique to Azure and enables a lot of scenarios. Our integration with Azure Active Directory, again, sort of leveraging the Microsoft ecosystem is something we try to do and help our customers do, because actually a lot of our customers already use some Microsoft services, so being able to use them together really helps them out. But compared to some of the competitors sort of out there, we aim to have a service that's very easy to set up. So we're talking about self-provisioning using the Azure portal. There's no installing server-side components. There's no configuring the service via XML files. It's all UI-based. It's very easy. It takes minutes. And ease of use is a big part of our game, I think. And by the way, one of the sort of new things users can expect is that we're now working on migrating to the modern Azure portal. So today we are only available in the classic portal. We plan to have a new experience available. Again, this is coming over the next few months, so it's not going to be very, very soon.
Excellent.
But yeah, I mean, these are a few ways. And by the way, just price is also something that I think we're strong on. The prices I mentioned may not be low, but in reality, when you look at trying to have a production service with one of the competitive offerings, that does not come cheap at all.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely better to buy what you need as opposed to just buying a whole bunch of hardware and installing it yourself. So definitely. Great, Anton. That's just a fantastic roundup of all the things that APM management does. And I like how you kind of give us a feel for what it did, what it does now, and you've given us a feel for what the future plans are. Are there any other future plans that you perhaps didn't mention that you can mention that I mean, I know this is a public podcast. Anything else that's coming up that you would want our listeners to know?
Yeah, and by the way, actually, one of the things that we aim to do is sort of provide some more transparency along our plans. So we plan to launch actually some more public information in that space. But I guess a couple of things that are coming. So I already mentioned sort of SOAP support, and XSLT is coming as well with that. Support for the modern ARM VNets in Azure is also coming, but also better integration with Logic Apps and Function Apps, so that a user can consume a Logic App and Function App as a backend in API management is something we're going to work on. This is again by the end of the year. Also support for the API lifecycle and versioning in specific. This is something that is possible today, but we don't prescribe a way to do it, and we don't treat it as a first-class citizen. So this is something we want to help out users with. Then also RBAC support for administrators, a very requested feature that is going to come this year. And also, I should mention audit trail that comes with that for administrators as well. From the governance perspective, this is quite useful.
Okay,
So I think
great.
this is sort of the medium-term roadmap for us.
No, I forgot to ask you earlier. The developer, when the developer sets up the, consumes an API, do they get like a Swagger file or something like that of the API?
Yes, so on our developer portal, where developers can get documentation about the API, can make a call to the API, they can also download the definition of the API in Swagger or Waddle. And of course, with WSDL support, with SOAP support, we'll also provide WSDL support as well.
Excellent. Great. Well, Anton, thank you very, very much. This has been a great kind of refresher on API management, and I'm sure our listeners will find this very, very interesting with all the information that you provided. Thanks again for all your time.
Yeah, thanks a lot. It's been a pleasure.
Okay. Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.